Hey, this is Billy Hulting. Thanks for tuning in. The Jazz Roundtable is recorded in front of a live internet audience. I've edited a bit from the original show, like reading chat room comments and tip shoutouts. They didn't seem to translate that well into the podcast format, but everything else is there from the live show. The shows are free, but if you'd like to leave us a little something in the tip jar, please go to our website at live@zerobpm.com/tipjar, and that is live, @zerobpm, or on Venmo at @zerobpm. You can choose which show you'd like to tip or if you'd like to help out with the show's recurring costs. We always love it if you subscribe and leave a review, as that really helps us spread the word. I want to make the show better. You can help. Please send ideas to info@live@zerobpm.com. Thanks. Have fun listening.
Welcome to the Jazz Roundtable, brought to you by Live at Zero BPM, with your host, Grammy Award-winning percussionist and mallet player, Billy Hulting. Tonight's guests, Michael O'Neill, Greg Karukas, and Michael Paulo. If you care to donate, click on the donate/tip jar link in the description or on our website at live@zerobpm.com/tipjar. You can also tip on Venmo at @zerobpm. And now, let's get to the music with your host, Billy Hulting.
Hey, everybody out there in internet land, we're back. We're going to do, this is Jazz Roundtable number one. Yes, it's kind of a take two because last week we had some issues, but I have solved the issues. Guaranteed those issues are gone. So anyway, great to be back. We have a killer lineup tonight. I'm going to just bring the guys on camera right now. There they are. Mr. Michael O'Neill. Mr. Greg Karukas. And the ever-popular Michael Paulo. Hey, guys.
What's up?
Not much.
Hey, guys.
It's great to have you guys on here. And an interesting thing, but we'll get into this, is I was calling guys to come on and do the first show, and these three were the first ones that said yes. And it turns out you guys have, like, an amazing history with each other. So we might talk about that a little bit later. But one of the things we like to start with, the one question I always like to ask, because people are fascinated by it, is like, when you start your day of music, what do you do? So Michael O'Neill, let's start with you.
Well, to be real with it, basically my go-to thing is something that I like the classical guitar, you know, it's just kind of my go-to thing, and I'll just start with exploration. You know, I won't even know what I'm going to do exactly. I might start with something like, start to, you know, and on into the jazz ethers.
Yes, I saw that. That's a great quote. You just can't help but get into the jazz ethers, can you, Michael?
Just can't help it. Can't help it.
You know? That's cool. Yeah. Hey, Greg Karukas, what about yourself?
Well, I'm kind of the opposite of Michael. I go just back to basics, and I just play really slow exercises with a metronome, and just because my chops, you know, it's, I have to warm up in order to play what I feel is decent. So I'll just warm up on a bunch of Hannon, and I'll play Hannon for maybe 15, 20 minutes, just everything from, I'll do it in the key of F, I'll do it in the key of G, but then I'll go all the way up to, all that stuff. And then once I get warmed up, then I'll go into the ether and just put my hands down and see what happens. And usually something cool happens. And then I'll always record everything I do. I usually have the computer on. I have this cool thing on my computer program where even if it's not running and playing, there's a memory, there's a buffer that remembers everything that I do in MIDI. And so all I do is press shift and the asterisk key, and up appears all the MIDI notes that I've played, whether it's the last 5 minutes or the last 20 minutes. And I believe me, some of my coolest, most crazy ideas have been captured that way, and I've had to go back and check them out and see, yeah, what did I play? Wow.
That's actually a really great tip for musicians, because sometimes I'll be playing something and it's like, oh, what was that? And I can't even remember what I played, and I wish I had a record of it. So
yeah, and that's – I took that – I've been doing that for a long time, but Joe Zawinul famously has said that he always has a cassette deck or had a cassette deck, and he would record all of his ideas, and then he would transcribe them, and that would become some of – the most famous Weather Report songs that we all know and love.
Yeah, I had heard that Birdland was started as a jam. They were just jamming, and they recorded it, and he gave it to some students to transcribe, and then they pieced sections together. So that's amazing. But yeah. Hey, Michael Paulo, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Great. Now tell us what you do for your warm-up and your playing when it's music time.
Well, coffee. Got a coffee in the morning, but it kind of varies. If I have a musical idea or something, I'll run to the studio, I'll lay it down and stuff. But these days I've been kind of just coming in my studio in the morning and putting up like these minus one tracks, jazz, and jamming along and having fun that way to keep my chops up. And also I got some new toys. I got a Sling Studio video hookup, so I come in and I hook up all the cameras and I try to record things and video myself and playing along with tracks, and I'll also put up my own tracks, my recorded tracks, and play along and practice that way with my songs. So I've been having fun with that, and outside of that, I mean, it's just since the COVID thing and we can't jam with other people, I just kind of hang out in my studio and jam with tracks, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that going along these days.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I didn't know that they had those kind of the jazz standards up on YouTube, because I use Band in a Box as an app that's on the computer, and also that little iReal B. You can actually get it to play piano, bass, and drums for you to play practice along with, and it's very cool. So, but that's a great. So now that you guys are warmed up, why don't we do some playing? Well, let's start with Michael O'Neill.
All right then.
The track with us, or what are you going to do?
I'm going to play a track, and this is from my CD entitled Funky Fiesta. This is entitled Once in Brazil, and this is my, I made this track minus the guitar so I could perform it in these kinds of situations. So we're just going to have to live with the click on the front end, because it happens to start with the Brazilian guitar, so I actually need the click to get going. But don't worry, it eventually finds its way out.
Okay, well, take it away, Michael O'Neill.
So here it goes. Thank you.
And that audience is really supportive tonight.
They are.
I'll tell you, yay.
A great bunch of people. And I'm talking to the people out there. Since we're rolling along with the music, Greg, do you want to play us a little something?
Certainly. Let me do something with a track.
Cool.
I've got some solo piano stuff I'll do a little later. But here is... Yeah, here we go. Let's see if this works out. Here's Girl in the Red Dress.
Nice. All right.
That was the take.
Yeah, that was the one. Thank you.
Man, all those guitars just playing behind me. I don't know who was doing all that guitar stuff, but it was okay.
Is it anybody we know?
Make him play it again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, right. Now that you mention that, I wanted to, Greg, it's great you mentioned that, because I wanted to say that one of the great things and bonuses of working with you all these years in the studio is I always know that it's going to be the best version of my playing at the end of the day when you get the final mixes. And, you know, the work we've worked hard together, and you always choose the golden nuggets. Thank you for that.
Well, there's certainly a lot of them, as we know. You know, Mike O'Neill has been playing guitar on almost every song that I've recorded since 1994. Wow. Going back to my fourth solo CD, I think.
Yeah.
You'll Know It's Me was that one.
Wow.
But yeah, great work. I mean, I just love it.
And
I love the song. I love the way the track came out.
Yeah, I've been meaning to ask you, that reverb you used on the lead stuff was so great. And what was the source of that, if you can remember?
Wow.
Okay, like I said,
he's got
great ears.
Probably Lexicon. I had an assortment of outboard reverbs at that time. Lexicon, BCM-91, TC Electronics, M3000, all those numbers. You know, just remember the numbers.
Yeah. Hey,
so, Greg, when I first heard that track on the Wave, I was driving my car, and the track came on, and I said, man, who is this? What a great song. And then I realized it's somebody I know. Nice.
That's pretty
great.
Cool.
That
happened to me way back when I was listening to, I guess it was KUTE or The Wave. It was the very early days. But I heard this song called Polo in the Palisades, which was a Russ Freeman tune from his very first solo album, where he programmed everything and did everything himself except for some percussion. And I said, that's a cool tune. I'd like to meet that. Whoever wrote that, I'd like to meet him and play with him. And it turned out he calls me about 2 months later and says, hey, I'm getting ready to do some gigs at the Baked Potato. You want to play? And that became the beginnings of the Rippingtons.
You manifested that, Greg.
Yeah.
Well, you got some great
comments. Far as manifesting, I think probably Steve Reed was the manifestor.
But I want to get it. Let's. I'm going to talk to Michael Paulo for a bit before I play something from him, because Michael, what are you working on these days? You talked a little bit about your sling stream thing. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, I've been since the COVID thing. I've been trying to do. You know, I'm also a promoter. I do concerts and a lot of shows and festivals. But you know, trying to find ways to get cats to play and reach our audience through the internet. So I invested in a Sling Studio setup, which is a video, multi-camera video program. And so I did a few shows with that and you know, over the internet, and kind of like what you're trying to do with the streaming, you know, online chat here. But, you know, it's fun. And I plan to do more in the future, more online things, even though the COVID thing is getting better. And hopefully we can go back to live playing in a few months.
Yeah, but one of the things that we get comments on our live shows on Thursdays from people that don't live in LA, that have no access to a lot of the musicians we have play here. So we're, you know, even when this is over, we're going to continue that and we're going to continue this. So it's cool. And the interesting thing, what Michael's talking about, he's got a box that is specifically set to stream directly to the internet. So he's not going through his computer. He's not going through all this stuff. It's a really cool setup. I'm going to read more about it because it looks like a pretty great thing. So
it works well too. It works well. Yeah. And
I'm going to play some clips because your setup there, we couldn't do like a live tracks thing. But tell us about this. You did this last year, the end of last year.
Yeah, this is actually more of a professional streaming situation. My sound production man set up a hookup in his backyard in Riverside and set up a stage and nine cameras, and he had a little crew there. So, you know, if he called me up and said, Mike, I got the set. Do you want to do some live shows? So I did one with my band, and I did another one with the guitarist Peter White with a full band. And it was outdoors, so it was relatively safe and open. So we did it, and it came off great. So this was the first show I did with my band. And, you know, so I took some clips from that. You know, just because so you wanted some music for us. Yeah. And unfortunately, because of my internet connection here, we couldn't get my streaming live.
Well, yeah, I've split this into two clips. So let me just play one of them now. It's a couple minutes, but it's like a medley of your hits, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's a
killer band, too. So check it out. Yeah, man, that was smoking. I do have a question. It's my buddy Arndt from, he's in Europe, and he stayed up till I guess like 4 a.m. or something there to watch this.
Yeah,
Arndt, it's great to see you. He says, well, one Michael P, you guys should come over to Europe, but he wanted to know who the drummer was.
That's Len Richards.
Oh yeah. Oh, Len. Yeah, hey, man.
Yeah, Len. Happy Len Richards.
Yeah, he's such a great drummer. I haven't seen him in forever.
Oh, we all love Len.
I'm going to get back to talking to the guys. You know, I didn't start out the show by reading everybody's resume. And normally when I introduce somebody, I like to get into that. But I'm going to go back to Michael O'Neill for a sec here. And let me get him up on the magic screen. There he is. Michael O'Neill, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey.
Michael O'Neill is a guitar player. And you know, if you wonder, how great do you have to be George Benson's guitar player? The answer is you have to be Michael O'Neill. you've also played, toured with Barbra Streisand. I'm going to ask you some stories about these guys later on, but you work with Al Jarreau, Stevie Wonder, Roberta Flack, Natalie Cole. I would read the whole list, but I'm trying to be done in the next half hour. And you've got, how many solo CDs do you have out?
Well, I have like, I think it's like five or six now, and I'm working on something new now. I'm just in my COVID space. I decided to do something that I've not done before, and that is a jazz guitar trio record, which is just
nice.
Guitar, drums, and upright bass. And that very drummer that was with Michael Paolo in that video, Alan Richards, is the drummer on this.
I got to call Alan, get him on the show. And then you're doing another album, right? A holiday album?
Well, yes, exactly. I'm about halfway done with that. It's like my classical guitar, like I played earlier. It's like I took these public domain Christmas tunes, and I did these arrangements on them, did some orchestration with the guitar as the centerpiece. And it's really pretty. I love that seasonal sound, you know. And you got to put my little twist on it, and it's definitely twisted.
Well, here we are in March. And I don't think people know that most Christmas albums are recorded in late spring, early summer.
Yeah, you better get on them by then, right?
Yes, I get all the calls for sleigh bell around July. To track sleigh bells for people. So, you know, he'll be working on that. And when anybody that is a guest on the show or performs here releases something, we add it to our newsletter. So if you're on the newsletter, you'll know when Michael's album comes out. So. That's very cool.
I'd like to just mention one thing too, because I was just inspired by this watching Michael Paolo's video there. The great band and his guitarist, I'd like to shout out Fred Shooters is an excellent guitar player. And every now and again, when he can't make the gig, Michael will call me, and I get the honor of joining him. And last it was the Christmas season of 2019. He invited me to play on his Christmas show out in the desert. Mm-hmm. It was him, his three saxes, Michael, Paul Taylor, and Jesse J.
Wow.
And it was, and Greg was playing keyboards on it, and Lan was playing drums. Oh. It was a blast. But Jesse J actually asked me to sing this version of Silent Night that she had recorded with this really great vocalist. So it's something that's rare for me. I've always sung. I sing backgrounds with George Benson. But anyway, they asked me to do it, and I got to get up there and just, like, shout like crazy. And they were very, very welcoming.
And it sounded great.
It was fun. Yeah, thank you, Michael.
But now I have a question. Phil wants to know about that cool electric guitar behind you.
Oh, Phil, let me tell you. They call this is a Dan Electro baritone guitar, so you can see the long neck scale, right? And they kind of call this the Wild Thing because of the shape. And this is a fantastic, as I said, baritone guitar. So it's tuned a fourth lower than the average guitar. The scale is closer to a bass in a way, gets down into that register. I use this one a lot. I've done a lot of music for this reality show called Pit Bulls and Parolees.
Oh, nice.
You know, set down in New Orleans, and this one really, you know, works well in that show.
That's great. Now, you do a lot of TV and film composing and stuff right now, right?
Yeah, the last decade I've kind of got into a lot of that. And it's interesting thing is that, like, it's a lot of things are on assignment. You know, they're looking for a particular thing. So I've had to stretch my abilities, you know, and try all kinds of stuff. And the interesting thing is that the big effect of it, one big bonus, is that it's given me an arrangers, composers, producers mindset every time I pick up my instrument. I think I tend to play with more taste and compositional, you know, attitude when I'm just playing the guitar now because of that.
Well, it's interesting, you know, talking to a lot of musicians, that everything you do in music has an effect on everything else you do. So, you know, I remember playing with drummers who had studied hand percussion, played differently with a percussionist than if they hadn't. And, you know, knowing piano will affect your guitar. So I can completely see how the compositional thing would affect your guitar playing and vice versa as well.
No, you're exactly right. And even to take that a step further, going on vacation also inspires you music when you, because it's like you stay, get away from it for a while. And I always feel the sense of when I come back, there's this sort of like fuel, like a new fuel that kind of like enters the picture, you know?
You probably, you just said it, the vacations, it's amazing how walking away from some of this stuff will help out.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask, and we were talking about how getting gigs, and I mentioned the fact that every TV show on Netflix, every movie I see seems to have a different composer on it. And you were talking about being yourself, being true to your writing and all that sort of stuff. You want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, for me, the TV stuff, I've never been a lead composer on. I work under established composers that have, they sometimes juggle 3 to 4 shows at once and cannot deliver all the content. So they had to assemble a team of guys, you know, of different people, guys and girls, of different styles, so they can fulfill the content they need to deliver to the client. But other than that, like I've been working with some younger directors, you know, on some independent films, and before COVID hit, I would go to these networking events, like, you know, they have small screenings, short screenings, you know, 8 or 10 films, and there'd be young filmmakers there, and I would, you know, I would introduce myself, and if I felt like there was some kind of a connection there, and I might be able to work with them, I would, you know, kind of establish a relationship, and that's kind of it. Like, there's a lot of these younger composers now, they go to the film scoring school, they come out, they're only 21 years old, and they're the next John Williams or something. But they get to go and work down at Hans Zimmer's studio. They get to start by sweeping the floor and making coffee. I don't have those. I'm not at that point in my life where I can do that. So I'm taking the other route.
We'll have to check out more of your TV and film stuff. But let me bring the guys back on. And Greg, I'm gonna go to Greg right now. Let me get him up here. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
You got several compliments on how people love your smiling when you play. You convey that joy that you have with the music, and that's very cool.
Well, it's very funny, and it really, there's a whole story behind it.
Do tell.
When I first came up, and I was playing in a couple of jazz fusion original bands in Washington, D.C., and I started in right around 1975. I think I was 19 or something. I was the youngest guy in the band. But so I had a Rick Fender Rhodes and a clavinet and then a mini Moog on top, and so it was like this, and I was so into the music that I would never open my eyes. I would never look at the audience. This was for years like that. And the manager of the band, he used to come up to me. It was just so funny. He'd go, "Greg, just one time, look at the audience. Just once, you know, just open your eyes and look." I go, "Man, I'm just so into the music. I'm just like not, I can't think about that." So, you know, we have to fast forward quite a couple of decades where I've became a little more, you know, comfortable and certainly playing my own music over the years. It's gotten to the point where, yeah, I get total joy. And it doesn't matter if it's my music or somebody else's music. Even though I have to concentrate more on somebody else's show, I still feel the same joy, but I might be looking at the music, so I might have, you know, I might have my glasses on. Well, so I can actually...
The first time I ever heard you play was with Shelby Flint, and I think you had just gotten to L.A., or you were pretty new here, and I was, you know, I was studying with the percussionist, and I would go and roadie for him, and we're just sitting there going, "My God, who is this guy?" You were amazing back then.
Yeah, six, seven, eight page charts stretched out on top of my synthesizer, and yeah, I'll never forget my first gig with Shelby, my 12th day in Los Angeles at Dante's. No rehearsal. She brought me the music about 4 or 5 days ahead of time, and it was all her original music, and so I had to shed pretty hard, and then that was the first gig, and we still play together to this day.
And I remember that gig because I was there.
How many years ago? You know what? That was Dante's, right?
Yeah, it was Dante's. And so now I get to talk about your resume because, see, you're a Grammy Award winner. You're the founding member of the Rippingtons, which you mentioned a little bit earlier. You played with Dori Caymmi and Larry Carlton. And you are the your group was the band for the Gary Shandling show, the original Gary Shandling show. I bet that was a blast. You've composed for TV and film. And I have to ask, because this is a great story, your first album session ever. Please tell us that story.
Oh, yeah. So we had this fusion band called Tim Ironman and East Coast Offering in Washington, D.C. And Tim was a woodwind player who doubled and played everything from oboe to flute. Alto sax was his main instrument, but they're all the woodwinds in between. So he did a lot of studio work. And through Tim, we also did a lot of jingle work. But one of these gigs was, he goes, yeah, I got this call. We drove up in his van from Maryland to central Pennsylvania to this small studio. And they had recordings of Yule Gibbons, who was a naturalist author. And he used to appear on talk shows and he'd talk about, yes, I go out in the woods and I go and I grab sassafras and wild asparagus and I make a dinner out of that. He plant natural plant and everything natural. So someone came up with the great concept of having him read the works of Henry David Thoreau and Walden's Pond and some of those writings. So he read those, spoken word, and then Tim and I did a bunch of interpretive, just improvisations between woodwinds and echoing synthesizers and Fender Rhodes, and we did a few overdubs, and that became this LP, Yule Gibbons Reads, or the works of Henry David Thoreau, and it's like a collector's item. You can still find it on eBay.
That's awesome.
That's where I had to get my copy. I paid, you know, I forget how much I had to pay, but I have an LP for my archive. But that was the very first LP I did.
That's very cool. But you have 13 of your own albums out now. Or let's talk about this Brazilian project, the solo piano piece that you're working on now.
Yes. So on most of my CDs, I've got a wide selection of styles and grooves, but I always try to be melodic. And there's been a couple of solo pieces over the years. Mm-hmm. And now with COVID, I was just home practicing piano and organ too, but that's a whole nother story. But one night I came across this box of cassettes from some of the live gigs that we did with Dori Caymmi, who's one of my favorite artists, a Brazilian composer, guitarist, and singer. And so I found this cassette and it said Le Café Dori with a star on it. So I said, yeah, I got to check this out. And so I finally had to buy a used cassette deck in order to play it. And that evening I played it and it was just like one of our best nights. And our sound man, the late Jeff Gillette, did a great job. Even in that tiny club, he was working the reverb, he was working all the mix, and my keyboards were in stereo. So, you know, that evening really got me very emotional. Will be my whole connection with Dori and all the Brazilians, but especially Dori, because that period was when Yvonne and I were getting very serious, and I actually proposed to Yvonne on the beach in San Diego while we were doing a Dori Caymmi gig down there. And then when we got married, Dori honored us by singing at our wedding in the ceremony, and we had a Brazilian band. It was Kleber George and his band with the guys and Luis Conte on percussion and Teca on saxophone. And anyway, so that evening I sat down and I said, you know, I got to remember some of these great melodies. So I said, and I realized, I had always played them on synthesizers and I had always played the orchestral colors, mostly strings and woodwind parts and a lot of that. So it was a whole new challenge to not only remember these songs, but also interpret them on acoustic piano.
Uh-huh.
And that evening just sent me down this rabbit hole, and I pretty much decided that evening to take up the challenge of learning a bunch of other Brazilian songs that I had heard for many years. My favorite albums are Milton Nascimento albums and Dori's albums.
Right.
But yeah, so I just really got down to work, and I also had to work on my solo piano chops because I had never really done any solo piano playing, except that occasionally there's one little spot in my show where I play one song. But this was a whole new thing, and it came out a few weeks ago, and I call it Serenata.
Oh, you know what? Cover. I have a little picture of that here. Let's do the Greg cover, and there it is. There we go.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. Digital.
Now, you said, now half the songs are originals, and you were telling me the other day that a lot of it wasn't preconceived. You sat down and kind of created the arrangements. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, it's just a real cool thing that at this point, you know, I don't consider myself a virtuoso on piano by any stretch, but sometimes I get in the zone and I put my fingers down and I can really come up with a song through composed to the end. And a few of these songs came to me like that. And so I kind of kept the first or second take that I did. And I, as raw as it might be, I left that on the CD. And lately, I'm doing some videos right now here, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I have to relearn some of those songs that were so fresh then. But, you know, I have to learn how to play them. So that's another little project that I'm involved in
well,
now.
Could you play one for us right now?
Sure.
Okay.
I can play something. In fact, I will just, I'm just going to wing it for a
okay.
minute. And I'm eventually going to get into a very famous song by Milton Nascimento called Ponte de Herrera.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, stunning. Joyce just joined us, and she said that was lovely piano, and she asked if that was a Milton piece, and the answer is yes, it is. So good ears, Joyce, and thanks for showing up. I forgot to say Kathy Siegel Garcia is here, and Kathy, she's kind of a regular of ours, and she has her own show. Weekdays, it's noon to two, and I was a guest on it, and everybody who's anybody in town has been on it. And she does a really good job. It's a really fun show. She does an interview show. It's very cool. So thank you. And hi, Kathy. But thank you, Greg. That was really fast. That was just beautiful.
Thanks.
And let's gonna go to Michael Paulo. And I'm going to play another clip of yours, Michael. Because
here we go.
And this one, the thing to notice about this one is, and I might have to have you recreate it sometime, is this starts out with one of your signature dance moves.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yep, that's it. Well done. So let me. This is the other half of the clip you made from your the live stream you did recently. Here we go. I should have been watching the end. Wait. Here we go.
Anyway, hello.
There's the audience. Yeah, that was cool. And a lot of people are clapping and a lot of hearts and everything for that, Michael. So you have some fans. And Arndt, your new European fan club president, is just like, yes.
Yay. I'll come to Europe anytime. I love Europe.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I have to make a comment about that last video with Paolo, okay? We all know about him and his dancing, but it gets a little more scary than that. On that same show that he invited me to at that Christmas show, his grandson is up there doing Michael Paolo now too.
Rio,
we'll have him on the next show. We'll have a dance off between the guests. You know, I was trying to keep the show around an hour, but we're having way too much fun. I don't think the audience minds if we go late, because you know what it is time for now, guys. You know it. You know what's coming, right?
What? What time is it?
What time is it? It's
Conversations in Music.
All right. This is the highlight of the show, ladies and gentlemen. These guys are going to have a little conversation here, and with both Michaels and a Greg, two Mikes and a Greg. What are you guys going to? Don't even tell us. I'm just going to put the screen up for the three of you guys.
Is this a conversation that's going to devolve into an argument? Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So
Mike says, this is what we do when we're on a gig. Like when we have this compulsion to want to noodle through everything, but we restrain ourselves.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to get out now.
Yes. So Michael will start it. Make sure you count it off, and Michael will end it. And go to town, guys. Have some fun.
Here we go.
Go, Mikey.
One, two, three, four.
That was great. Where's the applause? Where's the crowd? That was great. That is like a fan favorite. They love that sort of thing. So,
okay, I didn't like that one. Let's do another one.
Okay.
Yeah, another
take. We'll have you back on next week. Before I go, I want to hear Michael play again. But before we do that, we were all set up to do some road stories. And Michael said he's got a couple of good ones. You had something really nice to say about George Benson. And then you said you also had some short stories about Ricky Lee Jones and Barbara Streisand. Do you want to give us a couple of those?
Yeah. Well, real briefly, like with George Benson, the general thing there is that George is like one of the world's best storytellers. I mean, he tells the stories like where he can do someone's voice really well, and he does the sound effects within it. It's just like entertaining. It's very entertaining, and it's easy to miss the fact that there's an actual lesson in these stories he gives. You know, one of my favorites is what he talks about West Montgomery. He says, there'll never be another West Montgomery. And I say, why? He goes, because of his guitar strap. I'm like, what? Because of the guitar strap? Well, West Montgomery had that old school kind of like country western guitar strap, which was a thin, like leather strip. And then the pad right here that went on the shoulder. But it was very tight. It was taut on his belly. And when Wes did all the real active chord melody stuff, the guitar would stay still. The neck would stay real still. And George likened it to, you know, trying to play a piano that was moving away from you. You know, so then it really made sense, you know. So that's just one of many stories from George. Now, with Ricky Lee Jones, I got a call. She was doing a record called Pop Pop, which is an all-acoustic, you know, kind of, you know, American songbook record. Robin Ford was playing guitar on this thing. And they had a promotional TV show they were going to go do in Italy. And Robin couldn't make it, so he recommended me to go. And so I learned these songs, and this was in the day before, in the time before cell phones, really. So I went out to this studio out in Topanga called Skyline. Mm-hmm. They had it blocked out to do her whole recording. So they blocked out 3 hours to do this rehearsal. By the time I got there, I walked in, and I met Ricky for the first time. And she said, oh, didn't they tell you? And I go, didn't tell me what? The trip is canceled. I'm like, oh, really? So then from there, we're talking, and she shows me, she pulls out the guitar, and she goes, I'm thinking of recording this song. She does this acoustic version of Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And she asked me, what do you think? First of all, it was like odd to me, like this major artist is like, I barely met her, and she's asking me what I think. So, okay. I said, what I think is it's the wrong song. And she goes, really? I go, I know a much better Hendrix song for you. Up from the Skies from Axis Bold as Love, because it's got this swing. I just want to talk to you. I want to do you no harm. And it would fit with the rest of her songs. So I taught her the song. I couldn't remember the lyrics to the third verse, so Robin called his wife. She pulled out the album, got the rest of the lyrics. We went in a half hour later. We had cut Up From the Skies. Robin, wow. Myself, John Leftwich, and Ricky. It became the single and the video for her album.
Wow. That so is a great story.
Yeah, it was just so bizarre. It speaks to the spontaneity of her as an artist. Mm-hmm. It was great. The last one was with Barbara. I mean, all I can say is, like, you know, I always get the question about the diva. It's always the diva question, you know, about her. And I guess some people have experienced her in different ways. What I experienced was this woman that wanted to just always put her best foot forward and just, like, you know, to be her very best. And I was like, I volunteer to join you on that. It's like, I'm in. And I can tell you, we did this... We did this live record that we recorded at American Airlines Arena in Miami, and it came out as a record called "Barbara: The Music, The Memories, The Magic." It was nominated for a Grammy. When we were doing the run through that day, this is what she was doing. the camera crew, they were up on the huge, huge, like, ladders. The cameras were way up there. So we're in there. She's singing and directing during the sound check. She's going like this. People, okay, come in here on my left side. Come in closer here and get this side of me right here. People who need people. Okay, you, back out now a little bit. You know, she was singing the phrases and then directing the camera crew. It's like, who does that? Barbara Streisand does that.
It's amazing, but I'm somehow not surprised either. So,
yeah,
that's very cool. So,
tremendous experience, yeah.
And then Michael Paulo has a great story. And I haven't gone through his resume, but he's toured with Al Jarreau and Bobby Caldwell, Jeffrey Osborne. He's artist in residence at the Java Jazz Festival. So you have a bunch of solo artist CDs. And let's see. You did a recording for Miles Davis years ago. And this is just a great story. Could you tell us that story?
Well, I'll just go kind of how I got there. You know, I came home one day and I checked my answering machine, you know, one of those cassette answering machines, you know, with the flat ones and the cassette tape in there. And I pressed the tape and this message came on, and it was this guy. And he says, "Mike, this is Miles Davis calling. Call me." And he left his number. So I thought it was a practical joke from my friends. So I called all my friends. I said, who left this message? And none of them fessed up. So I said, okay, well, I'll call the number. So I called the number, and the lady answered the phone. I said, hey, is Miles there? It's Michael Paulo, and blah, blah, blah. So he comes to the phone, and he was like, hey, Mike, I heard your tape. I like what you're playing. And he said, I want to know if you want to come tour with me and stuff. And he had just gotten out of the hospital at that time, I think, and he was getting ready to go on tour again. And I said, man, Miles, I'm so honored, but, you know, I'm getting ready to go out with Al Jarreau. You know, we had just, you know, done our rehearsals, getting ready to go on tour. And so he said, oh, man, you got a gig. I said, oh. And I said, man, Miles, but I would love to play with you. And he said, yeah, well, maybe sometime we can do a recording together, right? So I hung up the phone, and I was just that alone talking to Miles. I was like, man, elated and stuff. But I thought, oh, you know, maybe he'll call me, maybe not. So about a year later, I get a call, and it's these guys producing a Miles Davis record, and they say, hey, Miles wants you to come and do a couple of tracks with him and stuff. So they sent me four songs. I listened to them. You know, I wanted to be prepared and learn the songs in and out. And then at the same time, all my friends were telling me, Mike, they had worked with Miles, and they said, he's going to try to mess with you, man. He's going to mess with your head. So you got to be careful now. Just don't let him mess with your head. And I said, okay, I got it. Thanks for the advice. So I went down to the session. It was at Ray Parker's studio in North Hollywood, and I walked in there. So Miles comes in. I get to meet him and everything. And so he tells, hey, the engineer put up a track. So the engineer puts up the 2-inch tape back then, you know, and starts playing this track. And it's none of the songs I shitted, right? I learned the songs in and out. I thought, I'm gonna nail this session. It's like something else, right? So, and it's just a track with Miles playing soloing. He's just soloing from the beginning of the track to the end. And so he's playing this track. I'm listening, I said, what melody? I don't know what song it is. There's no charts. And so he tells the engineer, stop right there. Go back. Rewind. So the engineer rewinds. He goes, right there. So he plays the track from there, and he looks at me. He says, Mike, I want you to double what I'm playing. And I thought, oh, okay. And then I, you know, thinking to myself, okay, remember what my friends told me. Don't freak out and stuff. Just do what he asked. So I said, okay. So the engineer rewinds the tape. I listen to it. I get it under my fingers. And then I go in and I record it. So I double what he's playing. It's just him playing a random solo, no melody, nothing. And so I got to double Miles Davis, right? So I do it, you know, I nail it. And then he goes, oh, that was great. He goes, now, I want you to harmonize it. But this was the coolest thing. He goes, come with me. We go in the studio. He's sitting at the piano. And he says, Mike, I want you to harmonize what you just played like this. So he starts playing all these polytonal chords and you know, half tones and everything, and trying to give me the vibe of how to do the harmony. So I said, okay, I can do that. So I go back in, Now, I got to remember, right, what I just played, Doubling Miles, and then I got to harmonize it the way he asked. And there's no charts, right, no music. So I tell the engineer, he starts rewinding the tape. I play, we cut it. And I nail it. I get it. And it sounds pretty cool, right? And so I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling confident, all right? I just did what he asked. So then he looks at me, he goes, yeah, now I want you to double what you just played on the flute. And I'm like, oh, my God. So now people don't know, the flute is one step transposed below the tenor, right? So now I had to remember what I played, the harmony that I played, and transpose it on the spot down the step, right? So I'm thinking, oh, man. So I say, okay, I'm going to nail this. So I do it. I remember it, you know. I play it, and I double both parts. And now I'm starting to feel pretty good about myself because I say, okay, I nailed this. I got it, right? And then he looks at me, goes, all right. Now play a flute solo. And I'm thinking to myself inside, a flute solo? I'm not a flute player. You want a flute player? Call Hubert Laws or somebody, right? And so I said, okay, well, I'm not going to argue. So I play a flute solo, you know, and then so he goes, okay, that's cool, right? So he pulls up another track, and it's a funk jam in F, key of F, right? Easy blues thing. And so same thing. He sits at the piano and he starts playing these chords. He say, okay, I want you to play a solo kind of this vibe, right? And it's kind of out like Miles stuff. And that was the coolest part of the session because I was just kind of hanging out with just me and him. And he was saying stuff like, man, Mike, I watch you, man. You got that look in your eye when you start playing and stuff. And it was cool just hanging out with him. So then the engineer rolls the tape. So I do a tape and I play through, and it's, you know, simple key of F, right? What can you do with key of F? But I start playing kind of the out intervals that he wanted. So I play a solo. And then I get done and I hear the guys in the studio, the producer and the engineer guy, go, wow, that was smoking. That's the first take, right? And so I'm quiet. I'm thinking, okay, I'm feeling good about myself, right? And so Miles, I can see in the window, he pressed the talk back button so I can hear what he's saying, right? So he goes, make him play it again. And I can hear the guys arguing, Miles, no, that was the take. That was great, man. He nailed it and stuff, right? And he pressed the talk button again. He said, make him play it again, right? So they say, all right, Miles, all right, okay, we'll make him do another take. So then the engineer comes out. He goes, hey, Mike, producer, can you do another take for me? I said, sure, no problem. So they roll the tape. I play another chorus, and then – you know, I thought I nailed it. I played pretty good. And then the producer goes, man, can you do another take? I said, oh, sure, no problem. So I do another take. And then he goes, hey, Mike, just do another one for us. So I do another take. You know, so after about maybe 7 or 8 takes, right, of the key of F, I'm thinking, well, what else can I play? I mean, right? And I'm thinking, oh, my God, Miles not digging what I'm doing. You know, I'm not making him happy. And then I start freaking out, right? I go, oh, man, I'm blowing this session with Miles Davis. So then I stop after the 7th or 8th take, and then I see in the control room through the window, I see everybody start leaving, right? They all start walking out the studio. And nobody's saying nothing to me. I'm standing there with my tenor on, and I'm like waiting for instructions. Because in normal sessions, the guys know, the producer or somebody say, hey, that's the take. Yeah. You can go. And that was great. We you know, silence. Dead silence, and I'm standing there. 5 minutes go by, and I'm starting to feel stupid now, right? So I'm like, okay, I got to find out what's going on. So I take my horn off, I put it down on the floor, and by then, almost everybody's gone. I walk in, I open the control room door, and I look at the engineer. I go, hey, what's going on, man? And he looks at me, he goes, oh, you're done, you can go home. Just like that, right? Nobody else. Everybody. Miles gone. Everybody's gone. So I walk back. I start packing up my sacks, and I'm thinking to myself, what just happened? Did I blew the date, man. So I pack my stuff. I get in my car. I'm driving home going, I just messed up the Miles Davis session, man. Miles didn't dig it and stuff. I'm freaking out, right? but I said, oh, there's nothing I can do. I got paid and, you know, I got to play with Miles and meet him and everything. So I'm looking at the positive side, right? So then a year later, I'm doing a gig with Al Jarreau at the Universal Amphitheater. And Miles is opening up for us. It's a co-bill, right? So I'm standing in the stairwell. You know, I'm talking to my friend Charlie Johnson, and I kind of had a carrot, eating, munching on a carrot on the stairwell. And I see on the side of my eye, Miles is walking up with his horn, going to start his set, right? Going to the stage. And he goes, hey, Mike, how are you? I said, hey, what's up, Miles? And I dropped the carrot on the floor, right? And so I went down to pick it up. And as he's walking by, he whispers in my ear, see what I do to you. Oh, man. So, you know, hey, that's Miles. but long story short, you know, the record came out a couple of years ago, last year, I think, and the producers called me and they said it was in the vault. You know, the record actually got shelved for Tutu that Marcus mm-hmm. Miller did.
Yeah.
But somebody was interested and they came in and they put some money behind it and said, we want to release this record, you know. So they called me up and, you know, they I did some overdubs. I played a couple more tracks. The record's called Rubber Band. Uh-huh. And, you know, the track, if you want to all check it out on the record, it's called Give It Up.
Okay.
With that, the Miles thing I played. So it's my grandson.
You got a lot of compliments and people say what a great nostalgic story that is. So any story about Miles is always great. But before we leave, like Michael O'Neill, you want to play another tune for us? You're going to do a solo acoustic thing, right?
Do I want to play? I can play like some, I don't know, some partial, I don't know what the hell. What am I doing? I don't know. Let's see what I...
Yeah, Mikey.
Well, that was beautiful, yeah, Michael. And thank you. Well, and thank you, guys. I mean, we could go on and on and on. There's so many things we could talk about, but I really appreciate your time. And thank you for being part of the first of the official Jazz Roundtable shows. The first podcast will be out later this month. And thank you guys so much. I'm going to play the outro video now, talk about the upcoming show. We've got a live show this Thursday with the Cary Franck Trio. Live jazz every Thursday night, 7 o'clock Pacific time. And then the first and third Tuesday of the month are the jazz roundtables, which is live also. And everything is archived, but Thank you, Greg, Michael, and Michael. And,
good job, Billy.
We'll hope to see you all soon.
Yeah, Billy, thanks, okay. Man.
Aloha.
So much.
Have a good night out there,
Aloha.
Everybody.
Aloha. See y'all. See y'all.
Thanks for joining us at Live at Zero BPM. These videos will be archived on YouTube and Facebook, so tell your friends. These Jazz Roundtable shows will also be released as a podcast, so please subscribe. Coming up on Tuesday, March 16th, it's the Jazz Roundtable featuring Joey De Leon, Oscar Hernandez, and Renee Camacho. Showtime, 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And as always, it's free, though donations are greatly appreciated. Go to live@zerobpm.com for details and to sign up for our mailing list. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. See you soon!